Online all the time. 88.3 Southern FM.
Welcome to the second of three space show features examining the United States' plan for the coming decade of planetary exploration. This is only the second time in 55 years of planetary exploration that such a plan has been prepared. Our guide is planetary scientist Steve Squires of Cornell University. In our first chapter, Steve explained what the decadal survey was and how decisions were made in drawing up this master plan. This evening, he's going to describe the wish list the scientific community would like the American Congress to fund. We begin with the major recommendations put to NASA.
Now, the recommendations. First recommendation, ongoing and approved missions. We recommend that NASA continue the missions that are currently in development and continue the missions that are currently in flight subject to senior review. All of NASA's ongoing missions are subjected on a regular basis to a senior review process in which a review board is convened, looks at the science they've been achieving, looks at the science they plan to achieve, and passes judgment along to NASA headquarters. That's a good process. It's working. It should continue. The missions that are currently in development, things like GRAIL, Juno, New Frontiers 3, which will be selected soon, MSL, MAVEN, development of those should continue. So we don't see any problems with the missions that are currently in development or are flying. Okay, the research and analysis program, NASA's planetary and RNA program. We recommend a modest increase to RNA funding. I wish we could have recommended more, but we have to be realistic. What we recommend is a 5% bump in the first year above the FY11 number, whatever that turns out to be eventually. And then a gradual increase of 1.5% per year above inflation in each successive year. We all know how much pressure there is on the programs that we write proposals to. We all know how oversubscribed these proposals are. We all have a strong sense that if NASA spends more money on RNA, they're going to get more good science. And that's the reason for this recommendation. At the same time, it's got to come out of something. And so we couldn't recommend it going up as much as we would have liked to. All of the recommendations you're going to see downstream from this slide are consistent, fully consistent with this funding increase. So this funding increase is accounted for in everything else that you're going to see. But I'll also mention that another recommendation on RNA was that NASA seek to reduce the number of proposals that people in our community have to write. By combining programs, by increasing grant sizes, there's an enormous burden on our community in writing and reviewing proposals. And we would like to see NASA take some steps to reduce that burden.
The scientists who prepared this report were very much aware that no space mission is successful or affordable without mature technology to enable it.
Technology development. Having a good technology program is fundamental to having a sound, healthy program of flight projects. The flight projects depend on the availability of technology. That was a critical gate through which every mission candidate had to get. And in many cases, there were missions that would have been great, but the technology wasn't ready enough. And we don't think NASA Planetary Science Division should rely on anybody else in NASA to develop for them technologies that are only going to be used by NASA planetary missions. So we recommend that NASA PSD, the Planetary Science Division, establish a technology program technology development program and rigorously protect it from incursions on that budget. A problem that we've had in the past is when money gets tight, that technology money is always a tempting target to go after. You go after it, the technologies don't get developed, and so the next mission that gets selected is selected with inadequate understanding of its technology, and that one overruns. It's a vicious circle. And we recommended this program be funded about 6 to 8% of the NASA planetary budget. That winds up being about $100 million. And again, all of the recommendations you'll see downstream are consistent with that level of technology program.
The United States has several ongoing types of planetary missions. We should explain what they are. New Frontiers are mid-cost missions. That's hundreds of millions of dollars, not billions. Discovery missions are low-cost ones, tens of millions. Flagship missions cost billions of dollars. Squires uses some other terms you may not be familiar with. FY15 means fiscal year 2015. An AO is an announcement of opportunity. That's when NASA says to the scientific community that a probe of such and such a planet is going to be funded, and they want proposals from the scientists on what instruments should be aboard and what investigations they should carry out.
The Discovery Program. We love the Discovery Program. The community loves the Discovery Program. NASA's last round of community-submitted proposals to Discovery, I think it was 28, is that right? 28 proposals came from our community. Discovery has produced, and you can see the results of five particular Discovery missions here, spectacular, cost-effective science, and can continue to do so well into the future. We recommend continuing the Discovery Program at its current funding level, adjusted for inflation, with a cost cap per mission that is also adjusted for inflation. And when you inflate that to FY15 dollars, it winds up being about $500 million. And we really strongly urge NASA to assure a regular, predictable cadence. No more than 24 months between AOs, but a regular, predictable cadence of Discovery AOs. Writing these Discovery AOs is a huge job. It's a big, big push-up for this community. And when you have AO dates moving around, it's so hard to keep a team together, to keep your team moving forward. We need to have reliable AO dates, so they should come on a regular cadence. We make no recommendations for specific Discovery missions. That is the way Discovery works. Now, our statement of tasks was quite explicit on that. We were not asked, nor should we have been, to provide specific recommendations for specific Discovery missions. We rely on the creativity of this community to generate the best proposals. But you will see in our report very strong support for Discovery as a program because of all the science potential it still has.
Space missions are increasingly being done as international efforts. Australia's recently released satellite utilisation policy recognises this. Steve Squires described one such international effort. Now, please be aware that an orbiter is a spacecraft that goes into orbit around a planet and does not land on it.
Okay, Mars Trace Gas Orbiter, this is kind of a special case. This doesn't quite fall into New Frontiers or Discovery or anything else. This is a mission that has been discussed between NASA and the European Space Agency. It would follow up on ground-based observations that suggest that there is methane in the atmosphere of Mars, would provide data that will help reveal sources and sinks of methane and a variety of other trace gases. The deal that has been negotiated with ESA is a very favorable one for NASA. NASA provides the launch vehicle and then most of the science payload, with ESA providing the spacecraft. So this is a good deal for NASA, and we recommend that NASA carry out this mission as currently planned, as long as this division of responsibility with ESA is preserved. Now, the deal with ESA on this mission is part of a longer-term discussion with ESA of a joint program of Mars exploration in 2018 and beyond, and I'll return to that in a few moments.
The Decadal Survey recommended some of the mid-budget New Frontiers missions. Oh, and by the way, a Trojan asteroid is a lump of rock trapped by the gravity of Jupiter and the Sun. They follow the same orbit as Jupiter on a path either 60 degrees ahead of or 60 degrees behind Jupiter. These lumps of rock can vary in size from mere grains of sand up to around 250 kilometers in diameter. Squires is speaking at a conference of planetary scientists who would be familiar with all of these terms.
Okay, New Frontiers. We feel that the New Frontiers program, which arose out of the last Decadal Survey, we feel that the New Frontiers program has been a big success. New Horizons is in great shape and on its way to Pluto. The Juno development is going well, and it provides a way for community derived PI-led missions to address science that's beyond the capabilities of a discovery mission. So we recommend that New Frontiers continue. It's been a success and we should keep going. We, however, recommend a restructuring of the New Frontiers cost cap. Currently, the New Frontiers cost cap, if you take it and you inflate it to FY15 dollars, is about $1.05 billion, including the cost of the launch vehicle. We recommend that instead, the cost be $1.0 billion FY15 dollars, excluding launch vehicle costs. Now, this represents a modest increase in the cap. And we've made this recommendation for two reasons. One is that by having that modest increase in the cap, we were able to capture under that cap some very appealing New Frontiers mission candidates, which I'll show you in just a moment. The other reason is that by excluding launch vehicle costs, we help to protect New Frontiers proposal teams from the extreme volatility in the cost of launch vehicles these days. Rocket costs are going crazy and mostly up. And it's very difficult for a team to realistically plan a mission if they don't even know what the rocket's going to cost. By taking it out of the cap, we protect the proposal teams from that volatility. And we recommend that NASA select two more New Frontiers missions. Those will be New Frontiers 4 and New Frontiers 5 in the coming decade. For the New Frontiers 4 selection, we recommend that NASA choose from among these five mission candidates. A comet surface sample return, just what it sounds like, comets, samples from the surface of a comet nucleus. A lunar South Pole Aitken Basin sample return, again, just what it sounds like. And a Saturn probe, an atmospheric entry probe. This is the big piece of Saturn science that Cassini didn't do. Those of you who have been in this business for a really long time will remember that there was once a mission that was talked about called SOP squared. Saturn orbiter and two probes, one probe to go into Saturn, the other to go into Titan. Cassini captured most of that, but it didn't capture the Saturn probe. This is the Saturn probe. A Trojan asteroid tour rendezvous mission and a Venus in-situ explorer. This is a Venus lander to go to the Venusian surface, look at composition, atmosphere, and so forth. We assign no relative priorities among these five. These five bubbled up to the top among many possible candidates. They were all close enough to one another in terms of science return per dollar that we feel that it is best to rank these five based on the AO and peer review process. So NASA should choose New Frontiers 4 from among these five. However, if the New Frontiers 3 mission, which NASA will select sometime in the coming months, addresses the science of any one of those five, you can pluck that one off the list, and it goes from 5 down to 4. For New Frontiers 5, we recommend adding two more candidates to the list. And again, all of this is based on those criteria that I told you about, science return per dollar and programmatic balance. The two candidates are an Io observer. This is a mission to go into orbit around Jupiter, highly eccentric orbit, many flybys of Io, and a lunar geophysical network, a network of geophysical stations on the surface of the moon. And again, no relative priorities among those.
Steve Squires now moves on to describe the expensive missions, ones like Cassini that is currently orbiting Saturn, ones costing billions of dollars. Using a naval analogy, these are called flagship missions.
Okay, the flagships. I got a long list of flagships missions for you. I wish we could do them all. But it's worth listing all of these and prioritizing all of these because, as you'll see when we get downstream, it winds up being relevant to the decision rules. The first priority flagship that we recommend is that we begin a joint NASA-ESA-Mars sample return campaign with the MAXC, that's Mars Astrobiology Explorer Cacher mission, but dramatically descoped from what is being discussed right now. Our second recommended priority, very close to MAXC actually, is a detailed investigation of an ocean on Europa using a substantially descoped version of the Jupiter Europa Orbiter mission. Third ranked flagship mission is the first in-depth exploration of an ice giant planet, a Uranus orbiter and probe. And I'll address in just a moment why we picked Uranus over Neptune. It was just for practical, pragmatic reasons. And then finally, either an Enceladus orbiter or a Venus climate mission, and there's no relative order or ranking between those two. Okay, let's do Max C first. The view that it was expressed very clearly by the Mars science community was that Mars science has now reached the point where the most fundamental advances are going to come from study of return samples. Now, Max C would do a little in-situ science, but fundamentally it's about collecting and caching a well-characterized set of samples that would then come back to Earth as part of a three-mission sample return campaign that continues on into the next decade. One mission that caches the samples, a second mission that lands alongside it, grabs that sample cache and puts it into orbit around Mars, and a third mission that captures that sample from Mars orbit and brings it back to Earth. This campaign would be fundamentally enabled from a cost perspective by the participation of the European Space Agency through all aspects of the campaign. So maintaining that partnership with ESA is critical to the success of this. Of the three missions in the campaign, only MAX-C is recommended for the decade that we talked about. The others would come downstream from that. And the view that we got from the Mars panel was that that sample cache does not have a short shelf life. It can sit there for a while if it has to. Important point. This campaign, Mars Sample Return, is multi-decadal in character. It has to be. And so we make this recommendation with full realization of the implication that it has for the next decade, and we based its priority on its anticipated total science return, that is, the return of the science return from the samples, and the cost to NASA of the entire campaign. That was how it was judged. Now, this one costs a lot of money. Remember I showed you that one that jumped up to $3.5 billion? That was MAX-C. Okay, the CADE estimate for this thing was $3.5 billion, and in the judgment of the Decadal Survey, this is too large a fraction of the planetary budget to be spending on Mars. It's too much to achieve programmatic balance. And so our recommendation was that NASA fly MAX-C only if it can be conducted a cost to NASA of $2.5 billion. Now, that number was not arrived at arbitrarily. The mission, as it's now being discussed, is a mission jointly with ESA that would deliver two rovers to the same spot on the Martian surface. It would deliver the ESA ExoMars rover and the NASA MAX-C sample caching rover. And the cost of accommodating both of those vehicles is what we believe drives the cost of this mission to $3.5 billion. As sort of a proof of concept that there was actually a $2.5 billion mission out there, we asked Aerospace to study the case where you use the Mars Science Laboratory Entry, Descent, and Landing System to deliver a single rover with the capabilities of one of these to the Martian surface, and that number came back at a little less than $2.5 billion. And that was for NASA alone. So if you throw in an ESA contribution as well, we're quite confident that a really good mission can be done for $2.5 billion. But we leave it to those two agencies to work out exactly the details of what that would look like. Critically, we feel that the D-scopes have to be shared equitably between NASA and ESA because it's so important to preserve the partnership with ESA. We can't force all the bad news onto ESA. It's got to be a fair split between NASA and ESA. Now, if that goal of $2.5 billion cannot be achieved for whatever reason, our recommendation is that MAX-C should be deferred to a subsequent decade or canceled. And there's no plan B. There's no alternate plan for Mars exploration recommended. This was what was told to us by our Mars panel. Mars sample return is the next right thing to do. And if you can't do MAX-C for less than $2.5 billion, then there are other high-priority flagship missions on that list that take precedence over something else you might do at Mars.
Missions to Mars capture the public imagination more than probes to other planets. However, scientific interest lies also in the other planets. In space jargon, JEO means Jupiter Europa Orbiter. This is a mission that would go into orbit around Jupiter's moon, Europa. The fascination with Europa is that beneath its icy surface is thought to be an ocean, the only ocean discovered in the past 500 years.
second priority, JEO. If you look at the last decadal, where Mars and the rest of the solar system were treated separately, the two highest priorities were Mars sample return and Europa. Seeing the same thing here. Okay, there may be another ocean on Europa, and there may be another ocean in the solar system on Europa, and this is a mission to study and try to characterize that ocean. Problem is, this one is very expensive. The KATE estimate for the cost of JEO is $4.7 billion. That's a scary big number, and it's too large a fraction of the planetary budget. We just simply cannot afford this mission at $4.7 billion. So we recommend that NASA fly JEO, but only if changes to both the mission and the planetary budget make it possible to do this one without it forcing the cancellation of other recommended missions. This will require a reduction in mission scope, and hence its cost. And it will also, we believe, require an increase in the NASA planetary budget in the form of a new start for this mission that comes with money attached, because this thing is so expensive. So one of our strongest recommendations regarding Europa is that NASA immediately begin an effort to try to find some major cost savings in JEO. And if you look in our report, there are some specific suggestions on how to do that. I also point out that the science of JEO would be enhanced substantially if, as hoped, it would be carried out in tandem with ESA's Ganymede orbiter mission. You can fly both of these at the same time. You get Europa science and Ganymede science, but you also get terrific Jupiter system science from two different places within the Jovian system. Two different vantage points on the planet, two different points within the magnetosphere, and so forth. So it's very nice synergy with a mission that ESA is talking about.
Only one spacecraft has ever visited the planet Uranus. That was Voyager 2, which flitted past in 1986 whilst en route to Neptune and beyond. Squires explains why an orbiter and a probe to Uranus is a high scientific priority.
Okay, the third one, a Uranus orbiter and probe. This is a cool mission. I mean, if you look at the solar system, there's basically three kinds of planets. You got terrestrial planets, you got gas giants, and you got ice giants. And the ice giants are fundamentally different from the gas giants in terms of their composition, in terms of their evolution. And we think that a mission to one of these planets has the same kind of potential for discovery that Cassini did at Saturn or Galileo at Jupiter. Now, you could choose Uranus or you could choose Neptune. The reason for zeroing in on Uranus was practical. It was not scientific. Remember, I mentioned those two gates. Turns out that in the decade that we're looking at, the trajectories to Uranus are better. Second, doing a good Neptune mission is enabled best if you have technology of aerocapture available to you, which we don't yet have. So for this decade, Uranus is the proper choice. If this got pushed downstream to a later decade, Neptune could be a very strong candidate as well.
Having talked us through the priority list for planetary exploration missions in the coming decade, Steve Squires then moved on to describe the process that will be used to decide which missions will be approved. That's our topic on the third of our Space Show features about the United States Decadal Plan for Planetary Exploration, which we intend to broadcast next week. By the way, if you missed episode one, it is now online at the Southern FM website /space.